2 Samuel 17, verse 24. As we look at this section here tonight, last session we learned about David fleeing for his life. John Reed, you can shut them off over here. Both switches. David was fleeing for his life from Absalom, and Absalom had rebelled against him. Remember, Absalom was his son, his oldest living son now, and he was rebelling against his father, and David was fleeing from him. And as he fled, he made his camp in a place called Mahanaim. All right, now let's look at our map here, and you can see where it was. He had been down here in Jerusalem area, and David fled across the Jordan River and went up to the Jabbok River, which is, I think it's this river here. I'm pretty sure it is. And it was right south of the Jabbok River is where he made his camp in Mahanaim. Okay? Now, that was a place where, remember Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, when David became the king, Ishbosheth was trying to become the king. That's where he made his headquarters. All right, so David went to the same place where Ishbosheth had been, and that's where he had his headquarters. Now, there was a heavily wooded area in here. It was a forest area in that area as well. Perhaps that's one of the reasons David chose the area. David was a military man. He knew strategy, and he was very wise in his abilities. And fighting in that kind of a territory would be to his advantage because the people who were on David's side were from this area over here, and that was kind of homeland. So if you're fighting your own home territory, you know the terrain, you know the area a lot better than people that are not familiar with that area. And so that's to their advantage. So I think that might be one of the reasons he chose Mahanaim for his headquarters. We don't know for positive. But David, when he got there, his friends and allies brought him supplies. They began to carry things in for him, and that's what we see beginning with verse number 24 of 2 Samuel chapter 17. It starts there and tells us that his friends were bringing him supplies. Verse number 24 says, "And David came to Mahanaim, and Absalom passed over Jordan, he and all the men of Israel with him. And Absalom made Amasa captain of his host instead of Joab, which Amasa was the man's son, whose name was Ithar, an Israelite, that went in to Abigail, the daughter of Naash, the sister of Jeruiah, Joab's mother. So Israel and Absalom pitched in the land of Gilead." Right, and it came to pass, when David came to Mahanaim, and Shobi, the son of Nahash of Reba, of the children of Ammon, and Makar, the son of Amiel of Lodabar, and Bezaleel, the Gileadite of Rogelim, brought beds and basins and earthen vessels and wheat and barley and flour and parched corn and beans and lentils and parched pulse and honey and butter and sheep and cheese of kine for David and for the people that were with him to eat. For they said, "The people is hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness." Now let's just take a look at some of these words here so you make sure you understand them. When it talks about parched corn, in the Bible, who knows what the word corn means? What's it refer to?
It's a generic word for any kind of grain.
Okay, it's a generic word for grain. And it's an English word. You ask a person to come from England what corn is, and they'll say, well, you know, wheat and barley and oats and rye. And, you know, when if you ask somebody that comes from America, they say corn is that corn on the cob stuff you eat, like sweet corn. That's what we think of when I think of corn. But corn, when you see the word corn in the Bible, remember it means grain of any kind. It's an English word. And even people today from England call corn grain. Grain and corn is what they are used interchangeably. Then it talks about parched corn. So parched grain, what would he talk about? But that what he refers to by that is parched means kind of roasted. And what they would do is they'd take the green wheat or barley just before it was fully ripe. You know, when it's starting to get hard, but it's not quite hard yet. And they would roast it in the fire and make it kind of toasted a toasted grain-like, and they would eat that. They liked that. That was really a specialty for them. You see the same thing in the book of Ruth. It talks about eating parched grain. And so that's what it was. And parched pulse would have been the same thing, probably beans and things like that, that they would have picked the same way, roasted them a little bit over the fire to make them parched or a bit roasted. So that's what that was. And the cheese of kine. Kine is another word for what? Well, sort of. Kine is, it refers to cows. All right? Kine is a cow. You remember in the story of the plague, not the plagues, in Joseph when he was talking about Pharaoh's dream and he had these seven kine, some fat kine and some skinny kine. Well, that's talking about cows. Or so there's some fat cows, some skinny cows. Kine is an old English word for cow. Okay, so keep that in mind so don't get confused with these things. So that's just a little bit of interesting information there that'll help us to understand. Now, I've called the message tonight, The Unnecessary Civil War. The Unnecessary Civil War. And the reason I did that is because this sad war cost the lives of thousands of soldiers. There were at least 20,000 soldiers that died in this battle. That means there were in 20,000 homes, there were wives that lost their husbands. There were mothers that lost their sons. There were children that lost their fathers in 20,000 homes in Israel. It was a sad day in Israel. And all of that could have been avoided if David had taught his son to obey when he was young. It could have been avoided. But David didn't do that, and Absalom became a rebel. And Absalom said, I don't want to obey Dad, and I don't want to be second. I want to be the king. And I'm not going to wait until Dad dies. I'm going to take over right now and kill Dad if I have to. I want to be the king. And he was a rebel in his heart. He was rebellious, and he was disobedient, and we've seen a lot of problems in Absalom's life as we looked at it over the last couple of weeks. He was proud. He was a troublemaker. He had all kinds of problems in his life. He was not the kind of a guy you wanted for a good friend. He was not a nice guy. And it was because David had not disciplined him and taught him and brought God his heart. You know, parents need to reach the children's heart while they're young. Reach their heart and bring them to Christ and bring them to God so that they can have a heart for God when they're young and then grow up in that. But if you wait until they're teenagers and try to reach their heart, it's too late most of the time. And they'll go off their own way and do their own thing and they'll be a rebel like Absalom was and cause grief to the family. Now, as we see this, so Absalom's rebellion cost the lives of at least 20,000 people. Very sad. Very sad. So as we look at this evening, I want us to notice the details of the Civil War, and there's some good principles we can learn from this. Number one, notice the preparations for the Civil War, chapter 18, verses 1 to 5. Chapter 18, verses 1 to 5. And because we're covering quite a bit of territory, I'm not going to read all the verses, but I'll read a few of them. Verse number 1 says, And David numbered the people that were with him, and set captains over thousands and captains over hundreds. And David set forth a third part of the people under the hand of Joab, and a third part under the hand of Abishai, and a third part, Abishai's son of Zeruiah, and Joab's brother, and the third part under the hand of Ittai, the Gittite. And king said unto the people, I will surely go forth with you, also myself. And but the people answered, Thou shalt not go forth, for if we flee away, they will not care for us, neither if half of us die will they care for us. But now thou art worth 10,000 of us. Therefore, now it is better that thou succor or help us. The word succor means to help. That thou help us with out of the city. All right, so here's the situation. David divides up his army. First of all, it says there that he numbered the people. The word numbered there, the Hebrew word literally means to muster the troops. The word muster means to gather. So David took time to gather troops. And so people were coming from all over Israel, especially over in this side of Israel. There were 2.5 tribes of Israel that were on the east side of Jordan, and among them were a lot of allies for David, his friends. And they were coming to him. They were coming from other places as well, I'm sure, but they were gathering together, and he was mustering the troops. He was gathering troops together, numbering them out, and counting them out. He had thousands of people with him. And then notice that he set captains over the hundreds and the captains over thousands. Well, that means he had lots of thousands of people that were with him, because you wouldn't set captains over thousands if you only had 200 people with you. All right, so that's pretty obvious. So he's got thousands of troops, and he's got captains over thousands, the captains over the hundreds, and they're preparing for the battle and getting things all ready and making plans and preparations. Now, Absalom drew a great crowd with him as well, but there were still wise and discerning and loyal people to the king. David was still the king. David was still on the throne, and there were a lot of people that are still wise and loyal and discerning to follow him instead of following Absalom. Absalom had tricked a lot of people. But you know, there's something important we can learn from that. Big crowds don't necessarily mean they're doing right. Absalom got a big crowd after him, but it wasn't that they were doing right, they were doing wrong. They were rebelling against God, they were rebelling against the king, and we need to be careful that we don't follow the crowd just because everybody's doing it. You know, there's that tendency in our hearts, well, everybody's doing it, so it must be okay. No, not necessarily, because often when everybody's doing it, it's not the right thing to do. So we need to be very careful about that. And Proverbs chapter 2 and verse number 6 says, "For the Lord giveth wisdom, out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding." We need God's wisdom to know what is right. And we need to make right choices. And so, the better we know the Bible, the better we'll be able to make right choices. We get wisdom from where? From the Bible. We get wisdom from the Bible. Wisdom is the ability to make right choices. This is the God-given ability to make right choices. That's what wisdom is, the God-given ability to make right choices. So if you want wisdom, you need to get it from God. God gives you that wisdom, and you learn wisdom from the Bible. So the better you know the Bible, the more wisdom you can have in your life. And some of you, if you struggle and say, I always make wrong decisions, it's because you don't know the Bible well enough. The better you know the Bible, the easier you'll be able to make wise choices, because you can base your decisions on Bible principles instead of on your own personal principles or your own ideas. And when we base decisions on our own ideas, many times we make wrong choices. But if we base them on Bible principles and the truths and Word of God, we will make right choices, and it'll help us to do the right thing. So we need to know the Bible. And we need to be very cautious and careful who we spend time with. Who are we following? Whose advice are we following? These men should have asked, is Absalom really a good guy to follow? Is he the kind of a guy we really want to be the king? Is he really the nice guy that he tries to put on in his politics campaigns? Is he that kind of, or should we be more wise and choose somebody different? See, they should have used wisdom, but they didn't. And we need to be very careful. Remember that verse over in 1 Thessalonians 5, verses 21 and 22? It says, prove all things, hold fast that which is good, abstain from all appearance of evil. Remember that? That's what we need to do with every single thing in life. He says we need to prove all things. Test everything before you do it. You come to a situation, you kids that are in school, and there's a situation where you got to choose between this and this. And you say, I don't know whether that's right or wrong. Maybe it's good, maybe it's not, I'm not sure. That what you need to do is you need to evaluate it with the Bible. You need to go back to the Bible and say, does this please God or does this not please God? And if you evaluate the Bible and you say, well, I don't think it really pleases God, then God says, hold fast that which is good and abstain, push away from all that is evil. Right? So we need to do that in every situation in life. And if the people in David's day would have done that, more of them would have sided with David instead of with Absalom, because following Absalom was a foolish thing to do. Now, David set up all these captains and divided his troops into three groups. He gave Joab a group, an Abishai a group, and an Ittai a group. So he divided up them into three groups. And then David said, I'm going to go lead the battle. And they said, no way. Because if you go out there and lead the battle and they kill you, they don't care anything about us. They're after you. And if they get you dead, then we lose. So you're staying back in the city. You can lead us from the city. You can help us from the city. So David said, okay, I'll do that. And then David commanded his officers, and he gave them a command. And this is a fatherly mistake, I guess you'd say, of David. David said to his three captains, he said, deal gently with Absalom. Now, why would he say that? Absalom was trying to kill David, his father. He was out to kill him. And he didn't care whether he wiped out all of the soldiers that were with David. But he just, dad's got to be dead so I can be the king. Now, Absalom was not a nice guy. And then David says, deal gently with Absalom. David's not thinking real clearly. Now, it is true from a father's perspective. Hey, he's my boy. I don't want you to kill him. Be gentle with him. But at the same time, if you don't kill Absalom, he's going to kill me. So it's a tough situation. It was a difficult situation. And this was because David had reared a rebel. If David hadn't reared a rebel, then he wouldn't be in all this problem. And so the problem all goes back to Absalom's youth. And now the Bible clearly states in Proverbs 19:18, chasten thy son while there's hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying. Now what does that tell us? It says that there's a time in a child's life when there is no more hope. Right? And often that's in their teenage years. Sometimes it's earlier than that. But they get to the point where they say, I am tired of following instructions. I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm going to do my own thing. Now, we've got to reach the child's heart before that time comes in his life so that they will say, I want to submit to mom and dad. I want to follow the rules. I want to be obedient. I want to please God with my life. Because many young people, they don't get that kind of education and training at home. And they get to that point where they say, I want to do what I want to do. I'm not listening to you anymore. I'm out of here. And then they go and rebel and it causes problems and heartaches for the family. So we need to be very careful. God tells us that that'll happen. He says there's a time you need to discipline while there is hope. And let not thy soul spare for the crying. Now, let's look at the fierceness of the Civil War. This was a fierce Civil War. God actually helped David. Look at verse number 6. Verse number 6. So the people went out to the field against Israel, and the battle was in the wood of Ephraim. All right, so they're in the wood of Ephraim. Ephraim was up in this area here. They're in the forest. All right, they're fighting in the forest. And it says, verse 7, where the people of Israel were slain before the servants of David, and there was there a great slaughter that day of 20,000 men. For the battle was there scattered over the face of all the country, and the wood devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. Well, that's an interesting statement. We're going to look at that in just a moment. So here's the situation. God is helping David's troops. All right? God's there with them. And we see two evidences of this. First of all, Absalom, he's got all these people on his side, lots of army, lots of people over there. They're great numbers of people. They're coming to get him. It looks like it's bad news for David and his followers. But God helps them. David's troops start to win the battle. 20,000 men die, but it says here that more people died in the forest than died by the sword. Now, what could that mean? Well, here's an idea that might have to do with it. Charles Spurgeon, he said this. He said, perishing not only by the sword, but among the thick oaks and tangled briars of the wood, which concealed fearful precipices and great caverns into which the rebels plunged in their wild fright when the rout set in. All right, so what he says, but all those kind of big words, is he said it was an area where there was a lot of caves and canyons and in places where they could fall, you know, fall over a cliff and die. And so they're run, you know, when the battle starts and David's soldiers are chasing them and they take off on their horses or whatever they're riding on and they take off and they turn around, I don't know where we're at, where do we go? I don't know, go this way. All of a sudden there's a cliff. And they go over there. So there's, so more people died in the forest and because of the forest problems than died by the sword. So there's all kinds of things in the forest. It could have been, some people suggest maybe it was the wild beasts of the forest. I kind of doubt that because the wild beasts wouldn't pick on Absalom's guys more than the other guys. So I kind of doubt it was wild beasts. It was probably more of the wild terrain, like Spurgeon said, where they were falling over cliffs and things of that nature that would have caused a lot of people to die. But 20,000 of them died. Terrible thing there in those days. Now, what can we learn from this? You know, it's we see here, first of all, that it is a blessing that when we confess our sins, God is faithful and just to forgive us our sins. David had done wrong in his past. David had made a lot of mistakes. But David got right with God, and so God is fighting for David now. You can see this in the way that the soldiers are dying in the forest. They're dying by the sword. God is helping David. Why is God helping David? It's because David had gotten right with God. And you know, when we've done wrong, if we will get right with God, God will come back to us and draw close to us. He'll bring us back to himself. And we can have that peace and confidence that God has forgiven us. And he will help us in time of trouble. And that's what we need to do. You know, every one of us here in this room tonight have done wrong a time or two. All right? Probably more than a time or two. And when we've done wrong, what do? If we get it right with God, we can be back in sweet fellowship with God. If we don't get it right with God, then God's works against us. And that's not what we want. So God's telling us here, just like with David, God blessed him because David had gotten right with God. All right? And David was truly the king and Absalom was wrong. All right? Now God worked against Absalom. Just like God was working for David, God was working against Absalom. And as Absalom was riding through on his donkey through the forest, and trying to find the enemy, all of a sudden some of David's troops come over the hill, and Absalom sees him, and he takes off galloping on his donkey, galloping through there, and as he does, his head got stuck in the boughs of a tree. Now, one of the things we know about Absalom is, remember Absalom, we learned a few chapters earlier, that Absalom was a rebel. He grew his long hair. That was a sign of a rebel. He had long hair, and perhaps, we don't know for sure, all we know is the Bible says that his head got stuck. It doesn't say what part of his head. It might have been his hair, might have been his head. He might have been going under the branches, and all of a sudden a tree caught him like this, and he's stuck by his head and hanging there. I don't know what it was, but whatever it was, he couldn't get down. He was stuck. That's why I kind of think it probably was his hair, because he couldn't get it unknotted. You know, you're hanging there, dangling, your horse took off or your donkey took off, and you're just dangling there. And if he's dangling by his hair, you know, how do you get that undone? And if it was just your chin or your jaw, you could probably kind of work that out and get loose. But he couldn't get loose. He was stuck. All right? And so somebody comes running and tells Joab of this situation. Let me read some of these verses here. Kind of dramatic here. Let me read them. Let's see. I don't remember which verse it was. Let's look at verse number 7, 8. Number 9. And Absalom met with the servants of David, and Absalom rode upon a mule, and the mule went under the thick boughs of a great oak, and his head caught hold of the oak, and he was taken up between the heaven and the earth, and the mule that was under him went away. And a certain man saw it and told Joab and said, "Behold, I saw Absalom hanged in an oak." And Joab said unto the man that told him, "And behold, thou sawest him, and why didst thou not smite him to the ground? And I would have given thee 10 shekels of silver and a girdle." And the man said unto Joab, "Though I should receive 1,000 shekels of silver in mine hand, yet would I not put forth mine hand against the king's son. For in our hearing, the king charged thee and Abishai and Ittai, saying, beware that none touch the young man Absalom. Otherwise I should have wrought falsehood against mine own life. And for there is no matter I hid from the king, and thou thyself wouldst have set thyself against me." Then said Joab, "I must not tarry thus with thee." And he took 3 darts in his hand, and he thrust them through the heart of Absalom while he was yet alive in the midst of the oak. And 10 young men that bare Joab's armor compassed about him and smote Absalom and slew him. And Joab blew the trumpet, and the people returned from the pursuing after Israel, for Joab held back the people. All right, so here's the situation. Absalom's hung there in the tree. Joab comes along and throws darts at him, and he dies. He's hanging there in the tree. He's dead. So Joab blows the trumpet, and the trumpet is calling off the troops of David. So they had certain tones of, you know, when they blow the trumpet one way, it'd mean go, another one mean stop. And so they heard the trumpet blow and said, "Oh, what's that? Oh, battle's over. Huh. What do you know? Let's go back home." And so they all headed back home, and the battle was over because Joab had killed Absalom. So the situation here is the Absalom here then has been killed because of his rebellion against David. Now, as we look at this, we need to see several things here. God was with David, and God, because David was right with God, but God was against Absalom because Absalom was rebellious toward his father and toward God. Now, that's important for us to see that, because young people, I think all young people go through a point in their life where they get to a point, especially in their teenage years, where they start getting, you know, a little bit more independent, and they start feeling a little bit rebellious. I know I remember days when I felt a little rebellious toward my parents. We need to be very careful about that, young people, because rebellion is going to hurt you. Don't rebel against your parents. You need to learn to do what is right. Learning to obey immediately and cheerfully submit to authority when you're young is very important. And if you are not right with your parents, you can't be right with God. Now let me say that again, all the young people listening. If you're not right with mom and dad, you're not right with God. You can't be. Why? Because God says, children, obey your parents. So if you're not obeying mom and dad, and you're not right with mom and dad, and they're mad at you, and you're mad at them, and you're rebellious toward them, you are not right with God. And you need to get right with your parents so you can get right with God. That's very important. Absalom didn't do that. What happened? It took, in Absalom's life, it went on and on and on until Absalom ended up losing his life. He died because of his rebellion. And rebellion always leads us the wrong direction. And right now, you may not be as rebellious as Absalom was, but if you're rebellious even a little bit, you need to ask God to forgive you of that rebellion. You need to go to mom and dad and ask them to forgive you and get rid of the rebellion in your life and get back in tune and harmony and happiness with mom and dad, because it makes all the difference in the world. You need to be right with God, because if you don't, God will work against you. Remember what James chapter 4 and verse number 6 says? It says, God resisteth the proud and giveth grace to the humble. God says, I resist the proud, but I give grace to the humble. And if we will be humble before God and admit our wrong and admit that we need to follow advice and admit that dad and mom are right and we're not always right, and we'll admit that, God will bless us. He'll give us grace. But if we don't, God says, I'm going to resist you. I'm going to resist you. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't want God resisting me. I got enough problems in life without having God against me. All right? So we don't want God against us, and you young people don't want God against you either. So we need to be very careful not to be rebellious. Now, notice next the reaction to the civil war. Job sends back news to David. All right, now, they didn't have any cell phones in those days. They didn't have any email. They didn't have any texting. There was no express mail. You know, how do they get the news back? Well, they had to have a runner. They had to have somebody run to take the message back. And so there's a young man. He happened to be one of the two men. Remember the two boys that took information to David first early on? Ahimaaz was one of them. And Ahimaaz comes to Joab and says, hey, let me run. I'm a good runner. I'll run. I'll tell the king. And he says, no, Ahimaaz, you can't do it. And he says, why not? Because you don't even know this whole story. You've only seen little bits and pieces of it. You don't know the whole story, so you don't have anything to tell him. I want to go tell him. So then Joab calls another man. He calls Cushai, and he says, Cushai, you've seen the whole thing, you know the whole story, you run and tell David the whole information. Alright, so Cushai takes off running. And to verse number 28, look at verse number 28. And Ahimaaz called and said unto the so Ahimaaz finally begs and says, oh, me too, I want to go too. And so Joab said, all right, Ahimaaz, go ahead and go. But Cushai's got the message. So anyway, they take off running. Ahimaaz runs faster than Cushai. And Ahimaaz called and said unto the king, all is well. And he fell down to the earth upon his face before the king and blessed the Lord. And blessed be the Lord thy God, which has delivered up the men that lifted up their hands against the king, my lord the king. And the king said, is the young man Absalom safe? And Ahimaaz answered, when Joab sent the king's servant and me, thy servant, I saw a great tumult, but I knew not what it was. See, he didn't know the whole story. He didn't know for sure that Absalom was dead. He didn't know what was going on. So, and then behold, Cushai, verse 31. And Cushai came, and Cushai said, tidings, my lord the king. For the Lord hath avenged thee of this day of all them that rose up against thee. And the king said unto Cushai, is the young man Absalom safe? And Cushai answered, the enemies of my lord the king and all that rise up against thee to do thee hurt be as that young man is. In other words, he's dead. And the king was much moved and went up to his chamber over the gate and wept as he went. Thus he said, oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would God I had died for thee, O Absalom, my son, my son. All right, so David gets the news. Now, let's just take a look at this as we think on these things. Ahimaaz wanted to be the runner. He said, I want to do the runner. Please, let me. But he didn't know the whole situation. You know, that reminded me, when I was reading through that, it reminded me of something I learned years and years ago when I was in Bible college. Someone made this statement. He said, if you're not part of the problem and you're not part of the solution, stay out of the situation. Good advice. If you're not part of the problem and you're not part of the solution, it's none of your business. Stay out of it. And if we get involved anyway, that's called meddling. Meddling. Getting involved in something that we don't know the whole thing. Now, Ahimaaz didn't know the whole situation. He didn't even know Absalom was dead. All he knew that there was a big tumult. What was that? I mean, he just said, a whole bunch of people are making a bunch of noise. I don't know what it is, but So he didn't even know the situation. He's getting involved in something he doesn't have all the information about. We need to stay out of things that aren't our business. A lot of times we'll hear something say, oh, well, I don't think that was very nice. They shouldn't have done that to you. That wasn't nice. And then we get involved and we get all shook up about something. It wasn't even our business. We need to stay out of it. Alright, there's a good verse in the book of Proverbs that is a verse that you need to remember. It'll help you. Even if you don't remember where it's found, think about what it says here. It tells us not to get involved in meddling. Alright, here's what it says. He that passeth by and meddleth with strife, belonging not to him, is like one that taketh a dog by the ears. Now you go grab a dog by the ears, what's gonna happen? Most dogs don't like being grabbed by the ears. And a lot of dogs would turn around and bite the hand that grabbed his ear. So what's God telling us here? He says, don't meddle with somebody else, because if you meddle in somebody else's business, you're going to get bit. You're going to get bit. Stay away from other people's business. All right, so what we need to do is we need to stay out of other people's business. If we're not part of the problem and we're not part of the solution, it's none of our business. Stay out of it. Okay, that goes for your kids, goes for us adults, goes for everybody. It'll help us. Now, David cried for Absalom. And David was grieved as a father. I mean, as a father, you can understand. All right, here his son had died. And he was grieved over that. But at the same time, Absalom was trying to kill his dad. So it's either you die or I die. And David cries and says, oh, Absalom, it would have been better for me to die than you. No, my son Absalom, he's crying over. Now, he's acting like a father. He's not acting like a king. And as a king, he shamed his soldiers. There were thousands of soldiers that just went out there to the battle. They risked their lives to save David's life. And now David's crying over the fact that the enemy got killed. And the men, what they do, you read the rest of the chapter there, the men kind of sneak back into the city. Usually when you've won a victory, they come back in and everybody's going, yay, we won the victory. Woohoo, good job, soldiers. Yay, good job. And they're excited about it. This time, they sneak back into the back door, kind of like, oh, David's crying. Sorry, his son got killed, but at least we're alive. They sneak in the back way and they feel ashamed. Now, Joab sees this, and Joab recognizes there's trouble. Joab thinks, David better take some action here or we got some problems. And verse number 1 of 19, he says, and it was told Joab, behold, the king weepeth and mourneth for Absalom, and the victory that day was turned into mourning unto all the people, for the people heard say that day that how the king was grieved for his son. And the people got them by stealth, that means they sneaked in quietly, that day into the city, as the people being ashamed, steal away when they flee from battle. But the king covered his face and cried with a loud voice, oh, Absalom, my son, oh, Absalom, my son, my son. And Joab came into the house to the king and said, thou hast shamed this day the faces of all thy servants, which this day have saved thy life and the lives of thy sons and thy daughters and the lives of thy wives and the lives of thy concubines, in that thou lovest thine enemy and hatest thy friends, for thou hast declared this day that thou regardest neither princes nor servants. For this day I perceive that if Absalom had lived and all we had died this day, then it had pleased thee well. Now therefore, arise, go forth, speak comfortably unto thy servants. For I swear by the Lord, if thou go not forth, there will not tarry one with thee this night, and that will be worse unto thee than all the evil that befell thee from thy youth until now. Then the king arose and sat in the gate, and they told all the people, saying, behold, the king doth sit in the gate. And all the people came before the king, and for Israel had fled every man to his tent. So here's the situation. Joab says, King David, you better stop crying about your son and get out there and congratulate the people for saving your life, or everybody's going to go home and you're going to be left alone and you will be all by yourself. And then you got big problems. And so David realized Joab was telling him the truth. And he got up and sat in the gate of the king and he talked to the people and calmed their hearts and thanked them for their battle. Now, as we look at this, the last thing I want us to notice here is that this is a helpful reminder that during times of emotional stress, it is not easy to make right decisions. You know, you get in a situation where somebody has died in your family, or you've just had a big blow up, or something has gone major wrong, and you're crying and you're emotionally shook up. That's not the time to make a decision. Why? Because a lot of times we'll make the wrong decision. David was making the wrong decision because he was all emotionally shook up. We need to be very careful about that. Be careful not to make big decisions when you're emotionally upset. Because we tend to think of ourselves and we tend to fail to think about others. And we often make wrong choices. So be careful about that. It'll help you if you remember that. Now, so tonight we've looked at these. We've learned some principles from the story. Not a very nice story of civil war that didn't have to happen. Thousands of people died because Absalom was a rebel. Thousands of people died because David didn't discipline his boy when he was young. Thousands of people died because David didn't bring his son under obedience when he was young. Didn't have to be that way, but it did. And as we looked at this, we saw principles about wisdom, about child training, about confession our sin and forgiveness of God, about obedience, about being right with God, about meddling, about making decisions when we're emotionally upset. All of these things are things we need to put into our hearts and keep into our minds and apply them to our lives. You young people, if you will take these things that we're learning, these principles we're learning from the stories, it will, if you'll put them in your life and live by them, it'll make a huge difference in your life. You will be able to avoid a lot of problems in life that other kids won't be able to avoid if you will put these principles in your life. It'll help you a great deal. One of the biggest things you young people remember this evening is to stay right with mom and dad. If you're not right with mom and dad, you need to get right with mom and dad because God can't bless you unless you're right with mom and dad. Okay? Keep that in mind. It'll be a help to you.